Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Institute for Personal Development, where total consciousness is the new frontier. Kriya Yoga is the union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices that initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. So good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm present. I got here.
Present and accounted for, as they say, right? And I want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. And today on The Voice of Yoga, we'll talk about the Christian myth of Easter and how the crucifixion of the body, the resurrection of the Son, and the reunion with the Father is a metaphor for apotheosis. We'll discuss the importance of the physics of spirituality and the process of the human becoming divine. Swami will explain how it got lost and how you can join us in resurrecting the experience by getting the light in your own soul in initiating the progressive cycle in human development. We'll show how religion is instruction for apotheosis instead of something to believe in like Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. Kriya Yoga is union with the divine. Learn how to use a perfect practice of Kriya Yoga to initiate the progressive cycle of apotheosis and expand your identity beyond the physical reality. So I guess, Swami, I guess we'll get started with the very first part of our summary. So let's talk about the crucifixion of the body, resurrection of the Son, and the reunion with the Father as a metaphor for apotheosis. What do you mean by that? You can explain that to our listeners who have never heard this before.
Well, what we're talking about here is the mythology, the myth, which is, mythology is a symbolic language, and it was specifically designed to give tangibility to some of the invisible but tangible aspects of the human experience. And the whole concept of this Christian myth of the crucifixion of the body, the resurrection of the Son, and the reunion with the Father parallels the metamorphosis of a butterfly, and it also has the same infrastructure as the hero's journey, because the metamorphosis of a butterfly is they're born caterpillars, they go into a chrysalis, and then they emerge as something completely different. And the same is true with the hero's journey. There's the separation, there's the journey, the task, the labors, and then there's the return to become king. So this whole thing of transformation or apotheosis is something that I really think that has to be examined a lot closer than what we're doing in our present religious communities, that we're substituting this kind of intellectual devotional mirage for true spiritual reality. And like you said in the opening explanation, we've lost touch with the physics of spirituality. We've lost touch with the meaning and purpose behind mythology. And as a result, we're not doing what these disciplines were intended for us to do. We're not becoming these humans in the adult state. We're remaining in a underdeveloped state, basically. We're chronologically aging and psychologically, spiritually remaining in this underdeveloped state. And we substitute a lot of intellectualism to try and cloak where we are and glorify where we are. But we're not really growing as a people.
So how do you think this all came about. What is your opinion with how did we lose these lessons, you know, about apotheosis, the hero's journey, where these seem to be such important parts of not just growing up physically, but growing up spiritually? How did that all get lost?
Well, in my opinion, I really think it happened with the split between science and religion. And when science and religion split, one of the things I found to be really interesting is that the split between science and religion actually came from the church. It was the church that started to persecute the early physicists who had discovered that, hey, wait a minute, spirituality isn't magic. This is all physics. And by this time, I would have to say that the church had become pretty much established in their position of just material gain as opposed to the betterment of a greater whole. And so our religions became corrupted. And the split between science and religion, I think, hurt everything, because our sciences actually became empirical. They started to say anything that wasn't verifiable through the senses had no validity. And without the concept of a complementary, unmanifested other half and the absolute, without the concept of a trinity, all of our sciences really fail. You know, that what they do is they get you to a certain point and then fill in with some sort of clause to make it seem like it proves out scientifically. But in reality, you really need a multidimensional reality system to understand true physics. And that's where I think, you know, the benefit of quantum physics has really kind of impacted us, but what amazes me is what little has been done with these discoveries as far as relinking them back to the concept of a trinity. You know, and also the possibilities of this concept of apotheosis, this whole thing of transforming a human into something other than it was when it drew from particles and waves.
Well, you know, I find it very interesting that even that word apotheosis, I didn't come across that word until I read Dan Brown's book, The Lost Symbol. And, I mean, we got to know that word's been around for a long time, but isn't it interesting that even with my upbringing with Christianity, nobody's ever heard that word, and I find it really refreshing that that's a word that you use all the time in our Kriya Yoga studies. So if people have never even heard of that word before, you know, what does that say about our leadership in these religious communities?
Well, that's the position that we consistently take here, is that we don't really have much to go on. And unless you are an independent scholar, unless you are a true seeker of your greater potential and are able to interpret a lot of the original texts as opposed to trying to follow somebody's interpretation for you, then you can start to see that, again, none of this stuff is magic, that all of it is physics. And just the concept of Easter, this crucifixion of the body, the resurrection of the Son, the reunion with the Father, has been boiled down to all you have to do is accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, is kind of a really watered-down interpretation of something that requires you to do something. And it requires you to separate from your attachment to things that are visible and tangible, and to reconnect or relink, which was the origins of the word religion, to something that was invisible and intangible. See, that's the whole belief part. But when you're looking for a person, an imagined person, or you want to believe in Santa Claus, or you want to believe in the Easter Bunny, and you don't really understand the origins of a lot of these myths, then it really gets convoluted and distorted. Mm. And so you remain attached to a source of sustenance that keeps your mind-body complex in a very limited position. Mm. You know, that matter and mind aren't growing psychologically and spiritually. There's no concept of God's power being employed.
When we talk about mythology, I think about back when I was in high school, and the only class that you could get to talk about mythology was a Latin class, I believe. But I recall that my parents, when they were in school, they had to take a mythology class. That was like a required study that you had to do. And so I think that even over time, it's become unimportant for people to try to untangle the mysteries in all our mythology legends. And I think there's something to be said with trying to figure out, well, what is behind a particular myth. And isn't that part of our studies and part of our growth is to peel back, you know, the story and really find the true meaning behind, you know, the lesson behind the story.
Right, to peel it back and understand the humanistic side. Mm-hmm. Like say, for example, I mean, you read these mythological stories about, say, for example, Odysseus coming back from the Trojan War, and he meets Circe, the sorceress, and she feeds his men some kind of fruit, and it turns them into swine. Now, the humanistic side of that is that this is a dynamic. And any time you have a situation where something that is potentially human, intelligent, that is reduced to a subhuman base of operation, that is a condition that is being portrayed by a particular story or myth. So the dynamics of addictive compulsive behavior, violence, is emotionality without the benefit of intelligence. So these mythological stories were ways of giving us a map for how the human psyche works and the interplay between matter, mind, and spirit. And without understanding the application of that, the pragmatic application of that, then of course you're just reading a story that is considered fantasy or false, which is how we interpret myth today, as opposed to a symbolic language for these more subtle states of being for a human experience.
And I personally think it's such a shame to have lost such important, you know, information and stories and the learning. I think it's part of the learning process. As you get older, when you reread a myth or a story, you may have a different perspective of it. So you're constantly growing spiritually. And I think to be able to use mythology as a means to an understanding could be an important part of this knowing. you know, to help somebody along and to gain some spiritual insight. Well, I think I'm going to come back and ask you another question about mythology, in particular about the Easter Bunny. So, but I think until then, we're going to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll return with you in a few moments.
Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudashyate.
If you are looking for a samadhi-based experience, IPD Kriya Yoga has the goods. A complete yoga program that includes the practices and the process. Starting with the separation from mother, including the labors and tasks of the hero and the return as a whole person. Practice makes perfect only when practice is whole. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. Samadhi, or total consciousness, is experienced by knowing and doing with devotion. Call or click now and get started. 603-929-0303 or www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste.
Purna Maria, Purna Meva Vashishate.
And welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, Swami, what I would like to do is get your take on the myth of the Easter Bunny. And I found an explanation online, and it's called The Myth of a Bird That Turned into a Bunny. And I'll kind of read you the story as quickly as I can. And it's a European pre-Christian religion that celebrated the fertility goddess Eostre, and or Ostara, as it was known in Europe. And what it is, it's an old Teutonic myth that says that one winter day, the goddess Eostre was passing through the forest. She found a bird dying in the snow from hunger and cold. So she decides she's going to turn that bird into a rabbit because they have warm fur and they can find the food more easily in the winter than a bird can. And so the bunny survived the winter, and when the spring came, the animal started laying eggs because it was once a bird, and then the rabbit then decorated every egg, leading it to Eostre as a sign of gratitude. So hence we have like the Easter egg hunt. So I guess I'm going to have to start to peel back the mysteries behind that particular folklore, but what interested me was when she turned the bird into a rabbit, and I didn't know if that could be something that we could say maybe part of our process of a human becoming divine, you know, turning from one animal to another. But I don't know, what do you think about that, about this folklore?
Well, yeah, I really think that whole concept of transformation, you know, and not understanding that there's a difference between mechanical changes and chemical changes, that not all change is transformation. And when you understand there's a difference between going from a human that draws from particles and waves to a human that draws from the invisible, intangible, unified field, that it changes you on a very different level than, say, for example, if you go from secretary to lawyer, or if you go from, you know, a size 12 dress to a size 2 dress, that you haven't necessarily transformed. You haven't gone through or separated from the physical. And the whole thing that when you do that, the changes will be apparent. And I think that's what a lot of the myths want to let us know, that it's going to be something different and very different than it was before.
Now, we talk about the labors of Hercules. Would you say that through the labors of Hercules that he was also going through transformations, because he was, you know, he had to go through all these tasks, you know, and complete the task to be able to move forward. So was that a kind of transformation for him, and something that we should learn from and do ourselves?
Yeah, and plus the other thing is that what we have to understand is that it's going to require us to do stuff, that it's not just something to believe in, that you have to undergo these changes and then the application of, you know, being able to operate from a different level of consciousness, a different degree of awareness, basically. And so that's one of the things that I think is really important, is that we recognize that it's not just something that you believe in or declare, but it's something that you have to undertake and do, that this change has an evidence procedure. You know, that it's all cause and effect. It's all physics.
So when we're embroiled in our everyday lives, I'll just use myself as an example, and I think we can all, those of us who are on a spiritual path, I think we all can understand when it's not going well, you know, when we're struggling, and if I undertake a certain task or I get frustrated or whatever the case may be, I try to bring it down to those three powerful words that you taught me, and that is put God first, and I try to think whatever situation I'm in, you know, I'll say that to myself, don't forget, you put God first, and then that actually helps me change my perspective of a situation or a feeling or whatever. And I realize that's not a transformation, but it's more like a perception, or it's more like an understanding that I still have some work I need to do to transform myself. But I guess my point is that we have to know when it's not going right. And then from there, maybe we can take these other, whatever it is that we have to do to make these changes.
Yeah, that's a big part of the practice, is being able to understand the difference between needs, wants, and purpose. And, you know, putting God first gives you a way of establishing your sense of well-being. Because if you have your essential needs, then you don't have to respond as if you're in danger if you don't get what you want. That in and of itself becomes like the ultimate coping skill, because your whole sense of self is now totally dependent on your number one need. And so you have what's called objectivity. You have the ability to distance yourself from something so that you're not controlled by it, because I'm not getting what I want. See, those are some of the adjustments that you learn that you can make.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is making sure that we have what we need, but then also trying to align ourselves with this sense of collective purpose. You know, and having a sense of who am I, and what was the intention of this particular incarnation? Because we all incarnate with a dharma, a duty, a responsibility. We all have a unique talent. And building your practice, you know, based on, you know, just that simple observation, you know, needs, wants, and purpose, and the interplay and integration of all of them to affect the balance.
You had spoken earlier about leadership, especially in our religious communities. Well, my question to you is what is it going to take? I mean, what is it going to take for America to wake up and understand that, you know, what's going on right now isn't really working? So how does the collective, you know, make that realization that, you know, what you're doing really isn't, or what you're following isn't really working? How do we figure that out?
Yeah, that comes back to the whole 100 monkey theory and the whole Chinese proverb, you know, when there's light in the soul, there's beauty in the person, harmony in the home, honor in the nation, and honor in the nation, peace in the world. But you've got to get numbers, because thought is energy capable of producing effects, but it's all measurable based on the amount of strength that it's emitted with. Now, thoughts are measured in phase and amplitude, but thoughts that are in phase, so like-minded thoughts, exponentially increase the amplitude. And once you get enough people growing psychologically and spiritually, then, of course, you can start to impact the collective consciousness. It affects critical mass. And that, to me, that would be probably the best way to do it. But in the meantime, it's one brick at a time. It's trying to get people to understand what it is that we're talking about here, the pragmatic application of it, and then how to get on board.
We used to say, when I used to take Reiki, and I used to teach Reiki, and it was always said that, you know, once you've aligned yourself to, you know, this universal energy, and you emit a different type of energy, and so people will either be attracted to you or they'll repel from you. Do you find that that happens too? As somebody's on a spiritual path, that they will attract certain people because, you know, it's just like attracts like, and at the same time, people will repel from you as well.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things we always say here. People think they have this predisposed concept that they think being spiritual is something that's going to be warm and fuzzy and feel good, when in fact it is threatening and frightening, because like attracts like. And those that draw from particles and waves usually are much more charismatic and able to attract more people. And so that's one of the reasons why the celebrity pseudo community is, celebrity pseudo spiritual community is so large, and the true spiritual community is so much smaller. And that, again, is the physics of spirituality, and it's a lack of education with regard to being an educated consumer.
Well, thank you for that explanation, and I guess it's about that time that we need to start closing down our program. So, listeners, I'd like to invite you out there to please visit our website. You can follow Swami on Pinterest and Twitter and Facebook. Be sure to visit the website at www.ipdtransform.com. Once there, you can post comments about this show or any ideas you may have for future shows for us to do. But keep those comments, questions, and curiosities coming, because Swami does enjoy hearing from you. And be sure to tune in next week. We'll talk about Divine Mercy, which will be on next Sunday. You can email me at lisa@ipdtransform.com with any questions you may have. And so any final thoughts or comments about today's show or next week, Swami?
Well, I'm just hoping to be able to make it for next week's show to get through what I'm going through right now. And with that, I wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.